And we're joined on the programme now by Danielle Miley. Danielle, thank you so much for taking the call.
Thanks, Greg.
It is nice to speak to you. And we're speaking about your sister, Miriam. She was cervical cancer victim. Can you tell us a little bit about Miriam? And if you don't mind, please, Danielle.
Sure. Well, you know, as we've stated in the Irish Independent article, Miriam was 34. She was a daughter. She was a mother to Rachel, the youngest of four sisters and four brothers. She worked in childcare in Derry. Great friend, great sister, just good girl.
Now, she was in the cervical check programme and had regular checks.
She did indeed, yes.
And in any of those checks, was anything flagged?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, but then she got terrible news subsequently, obviously.
She did indeed. In June 2011, she had a smear test, which didn't seem to flag any need for concern. However, in March 2012, when she had changed over to the Northern system, she was then diagnosed with stage 2B cervical cancer, so about 9 months after having a normal smear test.
And was her cancer diagnosed because she presented with symptoms, or did a test in the North pick it up?
No, she presented with symptoms.
So this was like a bolt out of the blue. I mean, we know tests aren't, they're screening, they're not 100% accurate, but still she would have felt comforted that her tests were coming back clear.
Absolutely, yes. She had said that, you know, she felt she'd done everything right. She'd gone for all of her tests, so she didn't feel that there was a need for concern at that stage.
And the diagnosis at that time, was she being told it was a treatable cancer at that stage, or had it progressed to a terminal illness?
No, initially that was the hope that it was treatable, but unfortunately it developed that it wasn't.
And how much of the conversation with her was about, at that time, sort of, you know, that the tests being clear and then this diagnosis, did that instantly trouble her, as well as the sort of overall terrible news, if you understand where I'm coming from, Danielle?
Oh, absolutely. Her main concern was Rachel and, you know, how had things gotten to this stage that, despite her having all of her tests, that she could now present with stage 2B cervical cancer. So obviously it was very concerning for her and everybody else.
And why did she go to the North for treatment, or for, you know, once she noticed some symptoms? Why did she present to in Northern Ireland as opposed to in Donegal?
She decided to go, and, you know, she worked, she was a cross-border worker, so she decided to register with a GP in Derry, and she decided then just to go and...
Like, did you get the sense she thought maybe it was a care choice, that she might get better care in the North?
Not necessarily. Okay. I think she just decided to, you know, go and see what was... She was working in the North and she decided to register with a new GP, and she pretty much within a month had been told that it was stage 2B cancer.
Mm. And she was very clear, even when she was facing, you know, her own mortality, that she wanted this story to be told.
She was indeed. Miriam initiated this case herself in April 2013, before she died. She felt that she was wronged, and she, as I said, she initiated all of this process herself.
It must be an absolutely awful time for the whole family, and I'm thinking too, particularly on Rachel, Miriam's daughter as well.
It was indeed, yeah, it was indeed.
Now, do we know at this point, I'm actually... We're going to be speaking to Vicky Phelan a little later on in the show. She's okay. The lady who I think has made most of us aware of this, although clearly, Danielle, your family was already dealing with this. Do we know at this point if Danielle has been part of this cervical check review?
If Miriam was part of the cervical check review?
Yeah, Miriam,
no,
I beg your pardon.
No, we don't know as yet, Greg. And as I stated in the report in the Independent, I made a number of calls with specific questions. Is Miriam one of the 18 women that is being referred to, or is she number 19? Is she one of the 209 women who went on to develop cancer after smears were mistakenly came back clear? Is she one of the two women that the authorities are saying that have yet, you know, their families have yet to be contacted? We still have got no answers, despite the numerous calls that I've made. And contact from the Irish Independent hasn't been responded to either. We've got no answers, nor have we got any answers as to whether Miriam's case is one of the 10 cases currently before the courts.
That lack of information must compound an already very, very difficult situation.
Oh, absolutely. As I said, you know, we have known about Miriam, obviously, for the last 5 years, and we in ways thought that we were the only people dealing with this. But and then when Vicky Phelan's story came out, it obviously resonated with all of us too.
And what I would find, I don't know, I'm trying to put myself in this position, the fact that this could have been avoidable, perhaps should have been avoidable, and then when that person is no longer with you, how much more difficult does that make that, if that's even quantifiable?
Well, that's really the reason that Miriam initiated the process herself, because, you know, she was made aware that it could have been avoidable. So it just obviously makes everything so much worse to think that things could have been different.
Okay, Daniel, thank you. We're going to be continuing with this story now with Pat McMiler. Of course, you can hold on the line if you so wish.
Sure.
Thank you very much for that. Pat McMiler from PA Dorian Solicitors. So from your perspective, Pat, and thank you very much for making the trip down to us today. From your perspective, the back, what is the case that's being taken?
Okay, the case, it revolves around the death, which we say arises out of the negligence of the HSE through Letterkenny. John, can you hear me?
Yes, lad.
Through Letterkenny Hospital. This case differs from other cases and substantially differs from even the Vicky case, because through our expert, are alleging that Letterkenny Hospital failed to diagnose independently of the labs in America. We're making a case against the labs, and Miriam said herself, what she said was that she did everything right. So when she initially had the smears, they came up as, if you like, questionable. I don't want to use medical terms, but the smears indicated that she needed to be watched and monitored. So she attended diligently at six-month intervals, and her smears were taken, sent away to be analysed.
And they should, the feeling should be they should have been flagged as, this is a lady that we need to keep a particular eye on.
And in fairness to her GPs and in fairness to her, she was very diligent about that and attended. And the usual problems arose then in the failure to diagnose in the labs in America. But what is very important, I think, particularly in Donegal, is that the lab, a sample was taken, a biopsy was taken from Miriam. And the biopsy, to put it in simple terms, the biopsy taken was insufficient, and it was underreported, or it was failed to be spotted. And basically the case being made is, had any of these procedures been properly dealt with or competently dealt with, her life would have been saved. And that's as simple as that. And Miriam sent for me, or at least through the family, I went to see Miriam. And at that stage she knew she was dying. And it was a terribly humbling and a very difficult experience for both of us. And she had a young daughter from whom she was keeping all of this, and she knew that she was dying because there was a failure to diagnose. She was a cross-border worker, and she had, I suppose, not to reveal too much of her private details or dignity surviving her death, but she was heavily bleeding and in difficulty, and she took advantage, I suppose, of the fact that she was a cross-border entitled person, and eventually she was referred to Altna Galvin Hospital, and effectively at first inspection they discovered that she was heavily cancered, is the term I would use.
So part of this case then will be, if I understand you correctly, is that there was an opportunity, excuse me, there was an opportunity beyond the screening programme to diagnose Miriam's condition in the Republic.
missed. That's really what concerns. It's of concern to the family, and it ought to be of concern to a lot of people, including the public reps who are so up in arms about all of this. We have issued High Court proceedings based on an expert report drafted and settled by eminent counsel. And in relation to ourselves, we have a reputation for bringing cases successfully. We don't bring spurious cases. And how this hasn't sent a red flag flying up in the hospital and in the HSE Northwest, or whatever it's now called, And it is disturbing that there seems to be very little response, if any, to the allegation and to the provable allegation that Miriam should be alive if Letterkenny Hospital had done their job.
Presumably, though, once legal proceedings are initiated, one would have to be very careful about any comments would be made.
But I absolutely, absolutely. But from. I mean, the summons is issued, the proceedings are underway for quite some time. Mm. Is that, am I too loud?
You're perfect,
Pat. Underway for quite some time.
You're perfect.
The allegation is fairly and squarely being made that her life should have been saved, and had things been done competently. I think part of the problem with these type of cases is the perhaps it's the language used. And I myself think instead of using terms like negligence and breach of duty, perhaps it's time to move on. And maybe if some term, language sometimes creates a barrier or a blockade, and perhaps if something like an actionable mistake, an actionable error, you know, sometimes the very language used in litigation puts everyone on the defence and walls are built.
Now, I mean, the government ministers have said that, and although we have seen it, that a lot of these cases, they want to settle them, that if there's liability there, that people shouldn't have to go to court to pursue this. Is this situation unique in that, not unique, but a different in that there's a cross-border element to it, but also the fact that you are alleging that there was actually an opportunity beyond the screening programme to identify this. Is this why this perhaps would fall outside of other actions that we're seeing?
Yes, this is distinct from other cases that you're... I mean, every day there seems to be a new case, but this case is different in that there was a biopsy taken. To put it as simply as I can, insufficient material was taken from Miriam, and there was a failure in the lab and in the diagnostics within the HSE in Letterkenny Hospital. And that's the case being made, of course, it's not proven yet, but we have an expert opinion saying that. And one would think that that would trigger a reaction in the State Claims Agency, in the HSE, in the hospital. And it seems that there's no reaction, and it seems that, to me anyway, that the political masters are deflecting attention to America and blaming everything on the labs, and even as you know, they're still making the case in a lot of the cases currently before the courts that the HSE can't settle the cases because the labs are to blame and the labs are accepting responsibility.
And there's questions about liability and all.
Just to deal with that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is as old as litigation is. There's nothing to stop Ireland, the HSE, the minister, whoever you want to say, there's nothing to stop them dealing with these people. And if the labs are to blame, thereafter pursuing the labs independently of the plaintiff. For example, two-car crash. Nobody knows which driver is to blame, and the passenger brings a case. One insurance company will settle with that driver and thereafter slug it out among themselves.
The slight concern I had with people dealing directly with the labs is that the protection that perhaps they could get here if it were HSE action is gone. If you know what I'm on about, like the government could say, the HSE could say, right, we're not going to pursue this or we're not going to pursue that. Whereas if it's over to a third party, the government, the HSE, whomever can sort of put their hands up and say, well, you know, we're a third party and this one involved. And that's where we could end up failing the citizens of this country to some extent, I wonder.
Absolutely. And I'll come back to deal with the mandate, if you like, and the very aggressive mandate given to the State Claims Agency. That agency is coming in for a lot of, if you like, sneaky criticism or backhanded criticism. Nobody's saying it out, but their mandate was, when they were set up under the National Treasury Management Agency Act, I think of 2000, I think it was Charlie McCreevy and Martin Cullen was the junior, as I recall. And their mandate was to ensure that the liability of state authorities are contained at the lowest achievable level. And this is repeated and repeated, and in the debates, at the time, there was a lot of fanfare made about ambulance chasing lawyers and the usual abuse that's thrown out when there's a crisis or a national scandal. Then a scandal arises, such as the Vicky case. And then suddenly lawyers for a week or two are great people. And then it all starts over again. But the State Claims Agency's mandate was aggressively to, if you like, take on the trip and
disprove.
Fall merchants.
Look, we've seen it.
And do you remember there was a huge outrage with people daring to sue county councils and this is when Ireland was rich, and it was all about crushing these people.
But if we want to see, if we want to see how we have operated heretofore, there are cases whereby this, and we've had them here in Donegal, where someone was severely injured at birth and left with incredible disability and what have you. The families have to go through this massive, long, prolonged court case. Then in the end, a settlement is made without an admittance of liability. And really, we could have all got to that place long before a family had to lay themselves to bear. And I wonder, will this sort of new attitude of not sort of throwing the kitchen sink at people who are making a claim, will that be extended beyond this? And I know I'm sort of extending the conversation a little bit,
but it's good.
I wonder, will a will there be a culture change in terms of state agencies or the HSE taking responsibility without victimising victims?
Well, anybody like ourselves involved in litigation involving medical negligence or public service negligence, our experience is that there is never really a fronting up. Like, under the legislation, there's a duty on every state agency to report any incident that gives rise to injury or death. And that's an obligation to report to the state. So, for example, it's beyond credibility that where allegations are made such as this, where a 14-year-old girl loses her mother and she issues proceedings, and the battle we had to get the information from the HSE and from the State Claims Agency went on for 15 months, simply to get them to identify the labs. That's information which you're entitled to. You know, if your X-ray is analysed by a radiologist, you're entitled to know who he is. If you're operated on, you're entitled to know who did it. Yet, 15 months of aggressive correspondence. And this is the norm. And it's easy to blame the State Claims Agency, but it's heads down, don't give any information, don't help, don't assist. In actual fact, in this case, I think it was in October 2013, I think, we were told, show your hand, show that you have the right to bring proceedings, and then we will give you the information if we decide to give it to you.
Would be unusual in any legal, it'd be unusual in any legal situation, that, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be unusual. Even insurance companies in the real world now, insurance companies are taking a very pragmatic approach to claims, and they're saving billions every year in legal costs, in expert costs, in engineers' fees, and because they take a look at a claim and they bring the person in, either through themselves, their solicitors, their investigators. They ask them, what happened in this case? Are we exposed? And if they've seen exposure, they deal with it. And in the main, they deal with people like us. You get a phone call and say, look, we're going to admit liability in this case. Let's see how the medical situation develops. And generally speaking, there is a very, very successful outcome to most cases. Of course, there are cases that have to be fought. And it's good for Ireland, it's good for the system that they are fought. But in these cases, the mandate given, and it's a historical kind of aggression, and it was all very much, let's tramp on the citizen, to keep the state's exposure to a minimum. Now, the other aspect of the State Claims Agency's mandate is that their riding instructions were to ensure the state's liability in relation to personal injury and property claims, and the expenses of the State Claims Agency are contained at the lowest achievable level. Now, that is not the way a state should treat its citizens.
Not especially when there is, not when there's also documentation circulating that says, you know, here's a heads up, this is going to get into the press, know what to say, because that shows there was an awareness there of it. I'll come back to you in a second. Danielle Miley, still holding there with us. It was Miriam's wish that other women wouldn't go through what she has. And I know we touched on this earlier, but I mean, it's very important that's, as I say, that was very important to her that this got out.
It was indeed. Miriam, as I said, you know, we keep going back to it, that she initiated these proceedings because she felt she was wronged based on what she was being told in Belfast. You know, we're also aware that Belfast did make contact with Cervical Check during Miriam's treatment in Belfast. So she was doing this obviously for herself, and that it wouldn't happen to anybody else, because in ways she felt that she was the only one.
And the delay in getting a resolution to this, what kind of pressure and stress is that putting on the likes of yourself, Susan, and more importantly, I suppose, Rachel, Miriam's daughter? Is it compounding the issue?
Well, it is absolutely compounding it, but we just want to ensure that Miriam is treated in the same way as everybody else. You know, if she you asked Matt there a few minutes ago, is it because Miriam went to the north, did that make a difference? Mm. But all of Miriam's smear tests prior to 2012, prior to her diagnosis, were done in the south and through cervical check. So if she's not one of, you know, part of the current cervical check scandal, you know, that's kind of what we're trying to find out. Is she part of it? Because all of her treatment, all of her smear tests prior to her treatment and diagnosis were in the south. So the fact that she went to the north for treatment should not make any difference, okay, in our opinion.
All right, Danielle. Thank you very much, Danielle Miley. Finally, Pat, you know, if this is a case that's contested, the arguments will be made that, as I said, you know, maybe the cancer developed in the short 9 months. Nothing could have been done. Tests aren't 100% accurate. That's in the letter that's sent out to women. It's a screening process, and we're going to be introducing a new system that, you know what I'm on about? You can see,
I appreciate that.
On a very layman's terms level, you can see where, if they're going to contest this case, how they might go about doing so.
I appreciate that. Well, our expert evidence will be to the effect that Miriam would have survived, that a relatively simple intervention. We're blessed in this case, and we were lucky. I want to say as well that but for Miriam going to the north and going to Alton and Galvin Hospital, ultimately to Belfast, we would now be racing to a start behind Vicky Phelan and the other brave ladies that are and that are currently coming before the courts. And it's a feature of other cancer cases and these type of medical cases.
Are you saying, sorry, when you say racing to a start, you wouldn't know that so you'd have been saying, right, does this affect us? So you'd have been starting at square one, really.
Yeah, we'd be starting at square one. So we were lucky. And, you know, back when this case started, we could never have got to the finishing line. You know, it takes months and months even to identify who your potential defendants are, to get records. We had to write letters to the head of the HSE, to the local area manager, effectively begging them to give us the information as regards a proper identity of the labs. And it was passed from pillar to post, over and back. Now, we did write one very aggressive letter that alleging didn't respond and had responded, but over and back for 15 months before we could get the information. Now, this is information which every person is entitled. When you go into hospital, you're entitled to know the records are yours. And this idea and this notion and this tolerance by, you know, the crocodile tears of politicians and the cant and hypocrisy and basically I can't say what I want to say, but basically the nonsense about they care about this and they care about that, let's not make it happen again. The State Claims Agency came in the wake of a scandal, exposed by people litigating at huge financial risk. There's no equality of arms. We're in the European Union now since 1973, and one of the great justice principles in the European Union is equality of arms. But in Ireland, if you're an Irish citizen or a person living in Ireland, the state will wheel out the big guns, the tanks, the financial tanks, and you're left with some solicitor or some doctor or someone trying to raise... Like, these expert reports cost an awful lot of money, and
The odds are stacked against us.
And yet, people manage to successfully bring the cases. And then you get something what is called a scandal, if you know, and suddenly then the campaign starts, the late show, the media.
It's a little bit
against
difficult.
The lawyers.
It's a little
the
bit
like, yeah, terms like lawyering up. You know,
I know where you're coming from here, Pat.
But I want to think, say about this case.
Yeah, but just to read between the lines, right? Yous have struggled for a long time to get this case as far as it has.
Absolutely.
Because of a very public scandal. And fair play to other women affected by it, their path is going to be much more smoother.
Well,
it's going to be triggered by the scandal as opposed to, without the high-profile nature of it, you're blocked at every turn, and that's how it feels. That's what you're saying there, really.
Well, we have got airtime as well. I'm gonna,
just a couple of minutes, but go ahead.
Just a couple of minutes. See, why is it always the case when something goes wrong in the health service or something goes wrong in the public sector? So if someone makes an allegation against Highland Radio that you defamed somebody, so you say something awful about some figure on radio, within 48 hours you will have a decision made as to whether you're exposed or not. If that happens in the public sector, where people's lives are at risk, it'll be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years before anybody makes a decision, oh, we have a problem here.
Yeah, I get you.
It's pushed around, it's paper shoving, and, you know, there is no responsibility, there's no accountability. And but for brave people like Vicky Phelan and people who bring cases, these things would never be exposed. And why can't They call in. There's a duty, first of all, to report.
Let's not forget Vicky Phelan was offered hush money and refused.
Absolutely. It. And Danielle was very much like her. She was, like, it was awful to, I knew the O'Brien family well. I mean, they're lovely, strong, great people, honest people. And to think that we could do nothing for her, and she knew she'd be dead. The other thing, the case is complicated by the fact that the news had to be broken to her daughter, and Susan and Dermot and Danielle, who you'll speak to, they raised this kid and nursed her through this process. She, of course, has been told recently the full story, and she realised what they were doing. Mm. Kids are much smarter than people think, but it's the fact that why can't, when someone makes an allegation that someone died because of a, we'll call it a mistake, negligence is a big word that raises.
It's allegedly. That's yet to be fully determined, yeah, but I don't.
Allegedly, of course. But just why to be can't fair someone? To why can't people call in the people and say, "Look, what happened here? Have we an exposure?"
Okay.
So now that's really
the progression of this case. What next?
Well, we have to get a defence from the State Claims Agency. We have to answer some particulars. At the moment, there's a fuss going on with examining slides and this sort of thing. We're hoping, and we've written. We're hoping that we will be included in some vehicle or mechanism to be set up by the government or by the State Claims Agency to get the case disposed of in terms of the financial aspect. One of the other things that's important to mention is the reason there's a reporting duty is so that there's a, to ensure that these things don't happen again. It was a very well thought out piece of legislation. And again, in case people think I'm having a go at them, Kieran Breen and the people who run the State Claims Agency are fantastic, strong, decent people. Their mandate is to keep this as cheap as possible and to effectively do down.
Yeah, but that's been waived a little bit in the wake of the scandal.
It is, as always.
Pat McMahon from DA Dorin, PA Dorin Solicitors, thank you so much.
Thank you indeed.
Thank you for calling in, and thank you, of course, to Danielle.
And really, this was about just getting Miriam's story out there.
And I'll tell you here, this sums it up, this one text. It doesn't sum it up, but it just heartbreaking listening to Danielle and Pat. Miriam was one of my best friends and I miss her every day. So now her death may have been avoided and she could still be with us is inconceivable.